American woman. It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmonson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmonson.com as well. And podcast recaps of the shows are there. We've started our new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Monson. Those great guests are also highlighted in the newsletter, so be sure and sign up there. We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to just jump right into everything. Rose Puglisi, Mesa County Commissioner, will be talking about Governor Polis apparently initially wanted to keep the CARES money that was coming into Colorado for our counties and our municipalities. I guess he's going to put that over on the legislature, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Dr. Jill Vecchio will be in the second segment, and we're going to talk how to get Colorado back open. And then Roger Hayes with Premier Employment Services. Want to ask him about the CARES Act, the Payroll Protection Program, and this whole unemployment program. So you'll want to be sure and tune in for the whole show. As we're looking at these issues, we look at them as what Rudyard Kipling said. He said, "I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." And boy, we need to keep looking at all these things. And it's a dangerous time in our country right now. There's a good event that's going to be this Saturday, April 25th, out in Parker. It is a video shoot to wish Melania Trump happy birthday. We'd love to have you join us if you are interested in doing that. Email me at kim@kimmonson.com, and I will get those details to you. We're going to be chatting with Rose here in just a moment. So a couple of things. First of all, just want to remind you that it's a very difficult time for our restaurants, our bars, and our taverns. And Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners, and they are currently offering delivery from all five Hooters Colorado locations. And they are accepting to-go orders. They can be placed at order.hooters.com. And then they have curbside service. You can just drive up and pick that up. We got Hooters last Saturday night. It was great. And Steve, I know that you've done that as well. It's just pretty slick how that works.
It is, because it's a direct in line between my wife's office and home. So, I mean, the ease of just placing that order, and then obviously she didn't have to go out of her way, and they ran it right out to her once she was there. It was great.
Yeah. So definitely be sure and check that out. That's order.hooters.com. So just a couple of other things before we jump in. Rose is here. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. As Tom Goodfellow, my friend from Grand Lake, says, or freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. It's never compassionate. Steve, I'm adding something else in here. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. Let's see here. Our quote for today, inspiration, Alexander Graham Bell. He says, before anything else, preparation is the key to success. As you know him, he invented the telephone. And our funnies for today, very quickly, Steve, are you ready for that?
Okay.
Okay. There's a new trend in our office.
I'm bracing myself, okay? Oh, yeah, go for it.
There's a new trend in our office. Everyone is putting names on food. I saw it today while I was eating a sandwich named Steve. Okay, we're going to jump right over to Rose Puglisi. She is, you know her, she's a Mesa County Commissioner. When this unconstitutional national popular vote went through the legislature, she jumped into action with Don Wilson down. He's the mayor of Monument, and they went to work to get on the ballot. It'll be on the ballot this November. on whether or not we want to give our voices and our votes to the big population centers like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, or if we would like to actually have Colorado's voices and votes count for Colorado. So she's quite a woman. Rose Puglisi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Kim. Good morning.
So, you never have a lack of things to do, Rose Puglisi. And first of all, thank you for getting that national popular vote on the ballot this November. And it's very important that we vote to keep to keep our electoral college. So how's that going to be worded? Which way should we be voting on that and the way it's worded? Because sometimes it gets a little goofy.
Absolutely. Well, we want you to vote now. And basically it says, shall Colorado join a compact of states to allocate our votes for president? So the answer is no. We do not want to join the National Popular Vote Compact. We want Colorado's votes to stay in Colorado.
Okay. So vote no on that. Let's jump over here, though, to what has happened recently. Since we last talked, we're going through now this coronavirus, Wuhan virus disruption. And it's tough for localities, for municipalities and counties. So kind of set this up. There was supposed to be money that is coming from the CARES Act, to my understanding, to municipalities and counties. So what's going on with that, Rose Puglisi?
Thank you. So $2.23 billion, with a B, dollars was allocated to Colorado by Congress under the CARES Act. And the intent, as you know, the congressional delegation members that I spoke to, was that it go to the state and local governments to help reimburse us for our costs due to fighting the coronavirus. And local governments are on the front lines. I mean, our public health directors, we're the ones who are seeing and tracking the numbers in our communities. And it's important that we have reimbursement, and especially for those rural counties who maybe had less outbreaks of coronavirus, but yet our economies are still impacted. We still need aid. And so this money came to the state. The governor said that he had to give it to the legislature. So now we are working with the legislature to see if any portion of that money can come to local governments. And it's not just counties. We're talking 59 counties that did not receive a direct distribution. So under the CARES Act, if a community had a population of over 500,000, they were given a direct distribution under the CARES Act. So in Colorado, that is five counties, including the city and county of Denver. And then the rest of the 59 counties, 259 municipalities and special districts from across the state received no portion of that distribution. So now it's up to the legislature to decide if we get that portion or any portion of the $1.7 billion that remains. The legislature, obviously, through a JBC report that was issued, has needs that they plan on using that money for, but we are still advocating that local governments, again, we are on the front lines. We have had significant impacts to our communities, and we deserve to have some portion of that money allocated to our communities. And part of the problem is there was some conversations about putting that money through a grant process as opposed to a direct distribution. The problem with that is there's 59 counties, 269 municipalities, and special districts from across the state that need a portion of that money. And now we're fighting amongst each other for this small portion of whatever it is that they decide to allocate, as opposed to working together to solve the issues that we are all facing due to the coronavirus. And that is not the position that we want to be, that we want local governments to be during a crisis.
Well, and that wasn't really the intent, was it, of the CARES Act?
No, I mean, from every person I've talked to that has worked on the CARES Act, it was intended that local governments get a portion of this money. And there are states who are giving their local governments portions of this money. And so I think that we can work with the legislature and get some direct distribution to local governments who really are in need.
So, but do you think part of this, the state's going to keep that, even though it was supposed to go to our local governments?
Yeah, it's unfortunate the way the CARES Act was written. It said that it did not prohibit local governments from receiving a distribution, but it did not mandate that the state give a distribution to local governments, even though, again, from the congressional leaders that I talked to, they all said it was the intent to help the state and local governments. There should be another round of funding, which the governor said he will advocate for local governments in the next round of funding. But we have to remember that, you know, Congress can continue to allocate trillions of dollars. It's still taxpayer money that has to be paid back at some point. And so we just continue to add to the national debt. And that's a whole bigger issue. But at this point, there's nothing that prohibits the legislature from giving a direct allocation to local governments. And that's what we are advocating for at this point.
So very possibly, Governor Polis may keep most of that $1.7 billion to backfill the Colorado budget. I mean, is that what you think, or do you know?
So it appeared that way, and the governor has said that that is not his intent, but that he has no discretion over that money, and that it is up to the legislature at this point. So I think at this point, we are just dealing directly with the legislature to try to get our direct allocation. Obviously, $1.7 billion to the state of Colorado is a lot of money, and obviously, we're trying to stay very positive that the legislature will do the right thing and directly distribute some of that money to local governments. What the legislature chooses to do with that money at this point is really in their hands.
Okay, but they're in temporary adjournment, and they are not going to start to meet until like May 14th. That's several weeks, and here you've got municipalities and counties that are need to continue on. So it's going to be a while before you're going to know about this money, right, Rose?
Yes, and that's the incredibly frustrating part, is that the legislature is not even in session yet. We hope that they will come back into session the middle of May. Nobody really knows yet. And so it's incredibly frustrating because there are costs that need to be reimbursed today. We all are working with challenging budgets, and we're trying to help our communities. I mean, I talked to the single mom who's a hairdresser and has to support four kids all by herself. I mean, there are some real significant needs in this community due to coronavirus. And in Mesa County, we were incredibly fortunate that we had such a low caseload of the coronavirus, but we were still subjected to the same restrictions that everybody else in the state was. And our economy will not recover quite as quickly. And so, there really needs to be some action taken here to help our local governments so that we can help our constituents who are also constituents of the state.
Well, okay, Rose, final thought before we go to break. What would you like to leave with our listeners?
You know, I just want everybody to realize that local governments are working incredibly hard to deal with the coronavirus, and we're fighting, and Mesa County has got a plan in front of the governor right now to reopen Mesa County on Monday, and we are incredibly excited about getting people back to work in a responsible way. And we hope that the legislature will work with us to get a portion of that CARES Act funding to local governments where it belongs.
Okay. Well, Rose Puglisi, thank you so much for joining us this morning and keeping us updated on that. And also, thank you so much for getting the national popular vote on the ballot this November and vote no when it asked that if we want to join that compact. So it's a no vote on that. Rose Puglisi, thank you so much. Mesa County Commissioner.
Thank you, Kim. Have a great day.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio on how can we get Colorado open back up, is there some manipulation on these numbers? You won't want to miss the conversation. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All the podcasts and recaps of the shows are there. And also just wanted to remind you, we're going to be doing a video shoot on Saturday night for Melania Trump's birthday. It's a really cool video that Reggie Carr has put together. And we're going to have a banner and then send that to the videotape us with that and send that to the White House. If you'd like to be part of that, email me at kim@kimmunson.com and I'll get you the information. On the line with me today is my good friend, Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She read the whole PPCA, the Obamacare, and was one of the few people that did that in the country, so she understood exactly what was going on with that. We've got her just for this segment today, and Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. I hope everybody's safe and happy out there.
And that's what we hope for everybody, for sure. But we need to get people back to work. I think my heart is a bit heavy, in as much as I was on a go-to meeting with a number of women last night, and one of the women said that she knows two people that have committed suicide because of the effects of COVID-19. And then I just saw this morning that Dan Bongino had tweeted out that one of his friends had committed suicide. And so, Jill, there's I think, really three things going on with this coronavirus, Wuhan virus thing. There's you can die from it. You can die with it, meaning you may have it in your body, but that was not the actual cause of death, although I hear that that is starting to be put on death certificates. And then you can have you can die because of, and that is many of these deaths of despair that we're going to see. So we need to get Colorado open back up. So how can we do that, Jill?
I think there are a lot of I think some of the plans that they're doing now are good. I like, I'm sorry, I was kind of prepared to talk about vaccines today, but this is great. So the getting it back open, I think we just need to have supplies ready enough for people that want to use masks or just use a scarf, cover your face. It's all about barriers to open the place up, in my opinion. It's all about barriers. From a medical standpoint, keep the aerosol away from you, keep your aerosol away from somebody else if you're, you know, the handshaking and all that stuff. So something to cover your face. If you're going to be in a smaller area with several people, it would just, I don't know. I mean, you know, and some people say we don't want to be forced to, and I don't think you should be forced to, but also be respectful of other people that, you know, just because they're young and healthy and at low risk doesn't mean that they can't have a bad bout of the virus. So just be considerate of other people, and we can allow places to open. The other thing is, you know, if you open restaurants and stuff, just know that if you're going to be going to work the next day, and, you know, is it really responsible to go to a restaurant and be socializing all over the place and then hop into work and potentially infect all your coworkers? That's what my husband's job, you know, they have an architecture firm, and they're trying to figure out, you know, we've got all these young millennials that want to go partying, and they live in downtown, which is the hottest spot in Colorado. So how do we keep them from running all over town right now and then coming in and potentially infecting the office? Because they don't want to have to wear a mask all the time, all day long at work. It's not comfortable to wear a mask. So those are some of the things I've kind of think about. You know, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm very concerned about this because I think there's a lot of fear going on out there, and you know, I'm not sure that I'm going to wear a mask because I think it's a bit of a freedom issue as well. I think that, you know, I think that what I'm looking at is many of these people that are expounding upon all of this are control people. I've not had them some of these bureaucrats and politicians, they've not been honest on other things, and they're using this force big time. So what I'm going to do, Jill, is I'm going to tease this podcast that you and I are going to do tomorrow, which will be highlighted in the newsletter. And then we're working on just how to get the logistics out so that it's available to everyone. So let's tease that conversation for tomorrow, because I am very concerned about this whole shaming on if you don't have a mask. And it's like, wait a minute, what about freedom? And if freedom is going to die because of this COVID-19 and the way that we've had people really, I think, overstep their power, and I don't trust the narrative, and so we need to have a conversation. So let's have that tomorrow for the podcast. Let's go to vaccinations, because that was another thing that we had on there. Let's talk about vaccinations. What's your thought on that?
So I've been looking on the CDC website and, you know, kind of all over the place. And we've had vaccines that have done amazing things, right? So smallpox vaccine was amazing and eradicated smallpox. And smallpox had been around for centuries. We knew smallpox came back over and over and over seasonally. Henry VIII and Elizabeth I in England used to leave London and go out on progress specifically to get out of London during smallpox season. I mean, it's like they planned their year around smallpox. And it could be a very deadly virus. So that was something that was around for a long time. Great, let's get a vaccine. Pretty much eradicated smallpox. Although they have retained some smallpox virus for research labs in case it's later used as a biological weapon. That was on the CDC website.
Wow.
Okay, so polio was kind of the same way. Horrible disease around for a long, long, long time, did terrible things to people. And so we virtually eliminated polio, but there's probably some in a lab somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. The SARS-1, so let's go more recently. SARS-1 in 2003, this is the SARS-2 virus. SARS-1 and SARS-2 have some, from what I'm understanding, have some very similar genetic sequences, which is unusual. But SARS-1 came, it conquered a few people. You know, there was a death rate. It wasn't quite as infectious. I think it was infectious, but maybe not as much as this one. It didn't have the latent period, I think. But it went away on its own in a year. So, and the other thing I think people need to know, the SARS-1 and SARS-2 are what they call RNA viruses. I'm not going to go deep into the genetics of it. But there are RNA viruses and DNA viruses. And just like a DNA virus, like our DNA, can heal itself. When the cells are dividing, if there's a mistake made, our DNA is capable of fixing that mistake, going, hold on, wait, let's go back here. We're going to repair this before we can move on. So it has a self-repairing mechanism. RNA viruses don't. They don't have that extra. RNA is a smaller, just think of it as like a mini-me for DNA, kind of, but it doesn't have all the same mechanisms.
So Jill, some people think that maybe this might have been man-made then, this particular virus?
No, not manipulated? Just because of the RNA versus DNA. There are categories of viruses in general, like all viruses. So, and the similarities between SARS-1 and SARS-2 in certain genetic sequences is why some scientists are saying this had to be made in a laboratory. This had to be recombination sequencing in order for there to be this level of similarity. In some cases, 100% similarity in genetic sequences, because this couldn't happen in nature in a bat and then have it transfer from an animal to a human. In order for that transformation to take place, there has to be some alteration in the RNA sequence and blah, blah, blah. So, and that part, anyway, So I don't want to get way into the weeds on the virology and the genetic structure of the viruses and stuff. But for the purpose of our discussion, the RNA viruses are much more likely to mutate, just like the flu vaccine. So the flu vaccine mutates, but usually by the time China gets the flu every season, they get it ahead of us. Our flu vaccine is made based on the genetic structure of whatever flu the people got in China. So we make our vaccine based on that flu. And by the time that flu comes over to our part of the world, there may be mutations. And essentially, there always are mutations. There are always mutations, so that by the time whatever flu mutation we get here, the flu virus that we've made for it may or may not protect us from that kind of flu. That's why so many people still get the flu in spite of the vaccine.
Boy.
So we don't know what, and this SARS 2, it could go away just like SARS 1 did. Mm-hmm. Go away. And all this research on vaccines could be moot, although they will have made great strides in case some other variation of it comes over. But I guess for the purpose of our discussion, my question is, my feeling is, don't force me to have a vaccine when we don't know what this is going to do. If they come up with a vaccine by fall, don't tell me I have to have it, because you have no idea what this virus is going to do. And you better tell me what exactly the sequencing is in this virus, because now it's starting to come out that, everybody's, a bunch of people are starting to say it out loud in front of God and everybody, as my dad would say, starting to say, this was lab-derived. Okay, so there are a lot of people deep in government who know the truth. At what point are they going to tell us? Because they know. I can guarantee you they knew a long time ago what this really was, and they've got to make sure that they cross their T's and dot their I's before they tell the American people what this is.
You oh, my gosh.
And we may never know. Yeah. We may never know what this is.
Well, Jill, we're going to have a longer conversation. So tomorrow we'll be recording our Sounding Off with Kim Munson with Dr. Jill Vecchio. It's going to be in the newsletter this weekend. So be sure and sign up for my newsletter. That's kimmunson.com. It's right there. Jill, the conversation goes way too quickly, but thank you so much. And we'll talk again hopefully next Thursday morning in the second segment. I really appreciate you keeping us updated on this. This is important information. That's Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She tells it like it is. Dr. Jill, thanks so much.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Before we go to break, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. How are you doing this morning, Jason?
Oh, I'm just doing fantastic, Kim. So you sent me a text about Weight Watchers, and so I went upstairs and checked, and I've gained a couple of pounds since it started, but with me, that's just like putting a teaspoon of water into the ocean, you know.
Well, I was thinking about it. There is another kind of COVID spread, and that's everybody's rear ends as we're all sitting around and just eating. So what about Weight Watchers? Is that a possible buy these days?
Well, that's an interesting thought, Kim, and it certainly could be. If you think about it, folks that want to go to restaurants, well, even if they have the money, in a lot of cases they can't because the restaurants have been closed or shut down, and maybe they don't want to do the takeout because they want the experience. Now, with something like a Weight Watchers, there's another publicly traded one that does food like this called MetaFast, Kim. Well, they may see somewhat of a decline in business if people cancel their subscription due to money reasons. A lot of folks use this as their main source of sustenance and meals. And if, they're not having money issues or they're still working part-time or if it's not that much different for them, you would think something like this might be a little bit less affected than a restaurant stock. So I think it's kind of interesting. Weight Watchers, which is actually called WW International, now for the stock, the symbol is WW, Kim. It was at about $39 before this garbage started. It dropped all the way to just below 10. Now it's sitting right at about 20.5. You know, earnings estimates are kind of a strange thing these days,
right,
Kim, because
right.
a lot of them are going to get pulled. But, I mean, you know, where we're sitting right now, they're expected to earn $2 a share this year, $2.33 next year. With the stock at $20 a share, that's only about a 10 or 12 P.E. ratio on future earnings. And, yeah, I think it looks interesting. The last thing I'll say is before this happened, I mean, their earnings growth wasn't that great the last few quarters. In June, they were down 23%. September, they were down 28%. December, earnings were down 9%. So, boy, they must have been planning on, you know, really turning it around here in 2020 to get the earnings going again. But I think it looks interesting, yes.
Okay. Well, and, you know, people may want to be losing weight after we come out of this. So one other thing before we go to break, what about the market? What's our update on that?
Well, I think we're kind of continuing to try to claw upwards, but the Dow, the S&P, both of those, Kim, have come right up to what you would expect to be resistance, which is the 50-day moving average. The NASDAQ has managed to push above it by a little bit and then drop back below it and then push above it. But, yeah, I think it's normal that we might see a little bit of resistance here. So what I'm watching for, Kim, is the Dow to be able to push its way up to maybe about 24,200, 24,300, and cleanly break above that. That gets us above the most recent highs and also puts us back above that moving average, which is probably a little bit of resistance here.
Okay. Well, and Jason, if people would like help or to talk to somebody about their particular investment portfolio, I know that you and your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management would be happy to chat with them about that. So what's that number, Jason?
Absolutely. Give us a call, 303-694-1600. That's 303-694-1600, or check us out on the web at airpresidential.com.
Okay, Jason McBride, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Kim, thanks for the good idea.
You betcha. And we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Roger Hayes. He is the owner of Premier Employment Services. And it's tough out there right now for our small to mid-sized businesses. And so we want to ask him about the CARES Act, this payroll protection program, and also the unemployment program. So we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business and is now open Tuesday through Sunday, 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Call 720-381-6663 to place our curbside to-go order, or stop in and grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663, or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. There's all kinds of great information there. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Roger Hayes. He is the owner of Premier Employment Services. And Roger Hayes, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. Good morning.
Good morning. And we've done a podcast together as well on Sounding Off with Kim Munson, so that's another reason to be signed up for our newsletter. But tell us a little bit, first of all, Roger, about what you do, because it's been pretty difficult for our small to mid-sized businesses, and that's right down your alleyway, right?
Correct. So I own what's called a professional employer organization, or PEO for short, and we're an HR outsourcing company for small and mid-sized companies, mostly in Colorado, but we've got other clients all around the country. And what we do is help them with their payroll administration, payroll taxes, health insurance administration, other benefits like dental, vision, 401k, and workers' comp, risk management, those kind of things. And what we do is we kind of, the way it works is we bundle everybody together, get a much better health plans than they could normally get on their own, tend to work with the bigger companies like United Healthcare to provide better products at a better price. But what we're doing right now a lot of is HR stuff and, you know, with all this COVID-19, trying to figure out what the new rules are in the workplace. Can you test employees? Can you require employees to go home if they're sick? The rules have changed in HR a lot in the last 60 days. So we're doing a lot of work with our clients on how to implement new rules. And then once these new COVID recovery plans came out, such as the PPP loan program, we've been working a lot with our clients with that to make sure that they get the right payroll reports. They make sure that they've got all the information they need for the SBA so they can apply for some of these loans or some of the other programs that the federal government is offering. And so we're here to help guide them through that and kind of get them to hopefully a much better spot than they are right now.
Okay, now I've heard that it's been difficult to get those SBA loans, and we, you know, Patty's done some of the research that it's like the big guys got money where it seemed like it was really destined or should have gotten to the small and mid-sized businesses, but you know, the bigger guys, they like Harvard, of course, now I guess they're going to get the money back, but you know, some of these big institutions have gotten the money instead of the little guys, but you know, they had the lawyers and the accountants to get everything set, where the little guy, you know, he's just trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. So I guess that's why it's, you know, would be really good for people to work with somebody like you. But what's happening? Are the young or the small businesses getting any of these loans, or what are you seeing, Roger?
The money's starting to flow out from the original $350 billion. We've had a number of clients now get notified by SBA that their money is on the way. However, the program, unfortunately, like a lot of government programs, the rollout was rather difficult. It did not go anywhere near as smoothly as anyone had hoped or thought. And then it turned into a bit of a fiasco because of exactly what you said. Some of these large employers like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse chain, they had the power and the bucks to get their stuff in order right away. And keep in mind, when you're a $600 million a year in revenue company, the bank's going to pay more attention to you. They're going to be a lot quicker to respond, unfortunately. And so some of these larger groups, these, I think, folks that shouldn't have even been in the program at all to begin with, but the rules were changed, the association rules were changed. They allowed them in. They took advantage of it. But they did get the money first, and they got some big, huge payouts, you know, between the $10 and $20 million range. A lot of our clients are smaller employers. They've got 15 to 30 employees. They were looking for maybe a couple of $100,000 at the very most to try to help get them through the next couple of months. And it went really, really slow. A lot of them haven't gotten their money yet. A lot of them didn't get into the program in time, so they're waiting for the second round to start. The House is supposed to take that bill up today and going to infuse another $250 billion into the PPP program. And once the House passes that, like I said, hopefully later this afternoon, President Trump will sign that. And then sometime next week, hopefully more small businesses will be able to get access to some of that cash.
So I was on a call last night with some women, and we were talking about Harvard. And, of course, I think they'd received over $10 million, maybe $12 million. And then Patty did some research, and their endowment, Harvard's endowment, is like $41 billion. So there's just kind of something wrong with that, in my view. And I guess Columbia and Cornell both got $12.5 million, and they have endowments that are in the billions of dollars. And so one has to kind of scratch your head and say, wait a minute, this is not what that was supposed to do. And it's I don't know, it seems kind of unethical to me that some of those big educational institutions would do that when, like you mentioned, there's these businesses out there that have 10 to 15 employees that are depending on those jobs, and that is what that was meant for. So what's your thoughts on that, Roger?
Well, small business is the backbone in the U.S. It's our backbone of our economy. There's way more small businesses in this country than there are large businesses, and that's what really runs the economy. The program was originally designed to help those folks out, but, you know, the way Congress works is they pass a bill and then they turn over the implementation to professional bureaucrat types, and they, you know, create the rules and how the programs are supposed to run, because Congress doesn't usually get into the minutia when they pass these bills. And when the regulations came out, U.S. Chamber of Commerce had helped push real hard to get franchise operators included in the program. And they had a good point, where you have a local Mexican restaurant here in town that has three locations, and they've got a grand total of 50 employees at each location. They're well underneath the 500 employee threshold. But the way the regulators wrote it was they would look at each one of your locations independently, not look at you as a company, kind of like same with a place like Harvard. They didn't look at you as an entire entity. And these folks were able to take advantage. It wasn't illegal by any means, but it was, I agree with you, there's some ethics questions there that should they have really been allowed into the program, and should they have really been allowed to take $20 million or $15 million out of the program for a company that has thousands of employees? Or in Harvard's case, and I've read the statistic before, Harvard has enough money in their endowment program that if they so decided, they could operate for 100 years without having to charge any tuition to any single student, and they could keep their student ratio exactly as it is today. Nobody would ever have to pay to go to school there again. They've got that much money in the bank. So it's really infuriating when you're trying to run a small business and you're just trying to stay afloat and keep your employees paid so that they can pay their bills and send their kids to school. And you hear about these really large national corporations that are pulling millions and millions of dollars out of a program that was supposed to help Main Street America. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like there were any changes made to the program in this second round of funding. What I think is going to be a big issue, though, is the public opinion for some of these companies. I think some of them that were going to try to get in may not now. Others have already said they're going to return the money. So hopefully some of them will do that, but it's really frustrating when you've got these really large groups that are bleeding the program dry, and it was intended. The intent of Congress was really to help the smaller employees. I've always had a frustration with the Small Business Administration's definition of a small business. Their number is anybody with 500 employees or less. And in our world, anybody that has 500 employees is a pretty large operator. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I've always wished they would adjust that number down to something more like 250 or below. But that's where it is now, and so that's what you have to operate with. So it's really frustrating.
Okay. Now, Roger Hayes, Premier Employment Services, before we go to break, is this something, I mean, this is in your wheelhouse of what you can do as you are helping different businesses if they hire you to do back office stuff. This is also, I mean, you're staying on top of all of this stuff, right? Am I hearing you correctly?
We are. We're staying on top of not just the PPP loan program, but the other programs that the government has rolled out. There are some tax deferral programs that might be an option for employers. We've stayed on top of all of that, plus all of the COVID rules, the new regulations that are rolling out. Unemployment, we help our clients do that. We manage that for them. So when employees file for unemployment, we're there to take care of the claims and those kind of things. And so, yeah, we have stayed on top of all of it. We keep our website updated as much as possible because things literally change by the hour. But we've stayed on top of it. We update our information. We've sent out a lot of emails to our clients to inform them of what changes are going on and how it's going to affect them so that they can stay ahead of the curve.
Okay. And during this time, are you taking new clients?
Oh, absolutely. It's a rough moment, though. I mean, you know, a lot of businesses are kind of pulling back, and they're not doing new ventures. They're just kind of trying to stay alive and tread water. But yes, we've actually had a couple of new clients join us just in the month of April alone. So we are still taking folks on. We're always willing to talk to people and see if we can help them out and get them kind of straight and narrow and head down the right path.
And how can people reach you, Roger Hayes, before we go to break?
They can call us at our main number, 303-221-0558. Or they can go to our website, which is premieremployerservices.com. And there is a link there. They can fill out a fillable page to let us know who they are, how many employees they have, where they're located, and what kind of services they're interested in.
Okay, great. Now we're going to go to break. When we come back, I need you to help me understand the CARES Act a little bit more. And then I've also heard that if people go on unemployment, they might be making more on unemployment than they were working. And so let's go to break, and we'll be right back with Roger Hayes.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. All kinds of great information, op-eds, podcasts, all kinds of great information. On the line with me is Roger Hayes. He is the owner, president, is that the right term, of Premier Employment Services, Roger?
I answer to just about anything you want to call me, but yes, that's kind of the correct correct way to say it.
Okay. And that website is premieremploymentservices.com. And they basically provide all of kind of the back office HR services for businesses, for small to mid-sized businesses that do not want to have that in-house. It's expensive stuff. And so this is a great way to come together. And I know that you're helping them. We were talking about the payroll protection program. So is that under the CARES Act, is that how that works out, or is that something separate? Where is that exactly?
No, it was part of the CARES Act that Congress passed. They did a couple of things. They had a 50% employee tax credit, and then there's a Social Security tax deferral program as well. Those were all part of that CARES Act that Congress rolled out to try to help businesses stay afloat during the COVID crisis. So it's part of a program, but it's really the biggest, most popular option of those three programs that I mentioned. The way the small business PPP program works is you can apply for a loan of up to 2.5 times your monthly average in payroll costs, and then you can use that money to help you make your payroll payments, benefit payments for health insurance, so whatever portion the company pays for, and then any portion that the company pays for retirement benefits. So if you offer a 401k to your employees and you have a match, you can use that loan money to make that payment as well. And then as long as you use the money for payroll, the health benefits, or the retirement plans, it can become a forgivable loan. So what you do is after about 60 or 90 days, you request for the loan to be forgiven. And that very simply means it's one of the very few times in history that you don't have to pay a loan back to the SBA. The money, you know, it's just forgiven. So it's a huge opportunity for companies, smaller, especially smaller ones, to have access to money that they normally wouldn't probably have access to. And then they don't have to worry about coming up with it later because it's going to be forgiven. As long as they follow all the rules properly and they file the documentation, you know, if you get $100,000 to make your payroll, it's something you don't have to worry about paying back. The other programs, the Employee Retention Tax Credit, the Social Security Tax Deferral, they're just deferrals. You're going to eventually have to pay that money back. You get a little bit of a break. It's a much smaller dollar amount than you get through the PPP program. But you've got to, at some point down the road, you're going to have to pay that money back to the Department of Revenue or to the SBA or whoever you're getting the money through. And that's why the PPP program has been in the news so much. It's just that much more popular.
Okay. I saw the renowned economist Art Laffer on television last night, and he is advocating for just getting rid of many of these payroll taxes. He says that would really get the economy going. What's your thoughts about that, Roger Hayes?
I think it would help a lot. Some of these taxes are pretty steep. But, you know, with like the Social Security deferral tax program, the tax deferral program, it isn't a huge amount of money. It's a good chunk, but it's nothing compared to what your payroll costs are. For small businesses, the largest thing that we've got to worry about is payroll. That's our most expensive item on our P&Ls. The next one, obviously, is benefits. That's a huge amount of money. Taxes comes third. Taxes are large. They're very burdensome because there's so many of them. If you're a small business in the state of Colorado and you're located within the city of Denver, you've got to pay federal tax. You've got to pay state tax. But if your employees don't live and reside in the city of Denver, Aurora's got a similar type head tax, you've got to pay extra taxes. And it gets to be too much after a while for a lot of small businesses. You've probably heard a number of different restaurant groups that are just throwing in the towel after 40 years or more of being in town. The costs have gotten to be too much. And now with the COVID stuff, they just can't survive. And I know Racine's downtown, which is a really popular restaurant, it's been around for a very long time. They had announced already that it was just with the increases in taxes and a few other things that they had going on. They've decided to close the place down here soon, which is really disappointing. So,
you mean forever?
Yes, that's what I've read, is that Racine's will be closing on a permanent basis unless somebody buys it. They're shutting it down.
Wow. Yeah, that is
a
real staple.
That decision, yeah, and they had made that decision before the whole coronavirus debacle. Their decision was really based on a lot of what's going on in the city of Denver. From what I had understood, theirs is more of a financial. It's just too expensive to continue to operate within Denver. And a lot of that has to do with taxes. And so I think some of these plans to either reduce the tax burden or eliminate some of these taxes are really good. And, you know, one of the big problems we have in our governmental structure today is when the Colorado legislature or the federal government brings up new taxes, they never take away the old ones. Mm-hmm. So they just keep adding to stuff. So as an employer, it's not as if they're going to replace one tax with a different tax. No, you end up having now to manage both of them and pay both of them. So it's going to be very, very burdensome on a lot of small, especially smaller employers, right?
Right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Roger, this is fascinating. We have about 3 minutes here, and I just wanted to ask you about unemployment. I've heard that there's people that could be making more money not working than working. What about that?
It is possible. That is a true statement. It's not going to be very common. Not a lot of folks are going to come out that way. But when you look at unemployment in the state of Colorado, and the other states differ, right? Florida, for example, has an incredibly low unemployment number. They only pay you about $275 a week. Colorado pays out about $618 a week at the top end for unemployment. So if you were an employee that was making more than $618 a week and you've lost your job, you're probably going to qualify for the full $618. But then under some of the legislation that has been passed recently to try to help folks out, the United States Congress added an additional $600 a week. So theoretically, you could have an employee that was making $1,000 a week in take-home pay, and Colorado's going to give them $618, and the federal government's going to give them another $600. So now they're actually ahead of the game. Just do the simple math. You got $1,200 plus bucks a week that you're getting on unemployment. You were making $1,000 before. You're $200 ahead. So there are some people that could theoretically be making more money on unemployment than they were making at their job. And that was one of the concerns when Congress was doing some of the things they were doing, was there were certain senators and congresspersons that were concerned it maybe will give an incentive for folks to just stay on unemployment longer and not start to look for jobs to get back to work. So there is a possibility. It's not going to happen a lot, But it is a possibility that some folks could really come out on the other end of this and actually make a little bit more money.
Do people have to pay taxes on the unemployment money they receive?
Yes, they do, at least on the state of Colorado side. So you can defer those taxes. You can request when you sign up for unemployment not to have them withhold anything. But come tax time 2021 and you file your 1040, you're going to have, you know, that bill will come due and you're going to have to pay those taxes then on your tax payment. So it is considered income. And so there are going to be taxes that are going to have to be paid on that, just like you would as if you were working. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't quite understand is they think, okay, I'm on unemployment, I just get this money and I'm good. The smart thing to do, obviously, is to have the state withhold for you so that you don't get a big bill come January or February when you go to file your income tax.
Okay. Well, Roger Hayes, we're just about out of time. Thank you so much. This is such important information. And people can reach you at premieremployerservices.com, premieremployerservices.com. And you can help these small, mid-sized businesses navigate this craziness. So, Roger Hayes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. You have a great afternoon, okay?
Yeah, most definitely. And again, his number is 303-221-0558, 303-221-0558. And so our quote for today is Alexander Graham Bell. He says, "Concentrate all your thoughts upon the work at hand. The sun's rays do not burn until brought into focus." So today, read great books, be grateful, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Riding high, through the mountains climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a